You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Since the global financial meltdown began in 2008, governments around the world have tried to find ways to strengthen market regulations. Joining me now to explain why countries like Germany and the United States are developing dramatically different approaches is Hal S. Scott. He's the Nomura Professor and Director of the Program of International Financial Systems at Harvard Law School and the President of the Committee on Capital Markets Regulation. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
Should I assume that almost every major economy is moving to increase market regulation?
Yes, that's the case, and that's coordinated by the G20.
And are we seeing governments around the world targeting the same kinds of weaknesses in their regulations, derivatives, for instance, or are they all going in very different ways?
I would say overall they're going in the same direction, but there's some notable exceptions. I think from the beginning, President Obama did a very good job of coordinating this response on the international level. But as one would expect, as you get into the details and the particular issues, the approaches in some countries would be different from others. But I think generally it's kind of remarkable the degree to which we're going in the same direction.
Germany voted last month to ban naked short selling of credit default swaps. What's naked short selling? Is it different than clothed short selling?
Well, naked is when you have no position in the underlying instrument. So, for instance, if you kind of bought protection through a derivative on a default by, let us say, Greece, if you owned a Greek bond, it wouldn't be naked. In a sense, you were protecting yourself from default on the Greek bond. But if you didn't own the Greek bond, then you would be doing it naked and, in some sense, speculating rather than protecting an existing position that you had.
So you're taking a negative position in a stock that you don't have.
Exactly right.
How would that help shore up European markets then?
Excuse me?
How would the ban shore up European markets?
Well, you know, the ban is in Germany. So
yeah, but Germany is a key to the Eurozone, isn't
that's
it?
That's correct, but you can do a short sale or a take a naked CDS position on Greek debt outside of Germany. So I think part of the problem Germany has pursuing this is, you know, what good is it to just prescribe something being done in Germany when the same thing can be done anyplace else? And it's exactly that kind of arbitrage of regulation that argues for an international response.
Did this round of negative speculation start with the Greek debt crisis, or were there problems before in the European markets?
Well, it's not the first time that this has ever happened. Every time there's a kind of possible default of a sovereign, we see this kind of speculation. If you go back to Argentine debt, or the, what turned out to be an Argentine debt default in advance of that, there was a lot of speculation on Argentine debt. So it's not like this is the first time it's ever happened, but I think it is the first time that it's ever happened to a country that had the euro.
Why do some think that the ban may have touched off the stock sell-off both in Europe and the United States a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, one never knows why the market does what it does. So everybody who comes on and tells you, oh, it was this reason or that, it's largely speculative in and of itself. I think the sell-off had more to do with the fundamentals of European countries, not only Greece, but Spain, you know, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, even. It's a concern with the future stability of the economies in Europe, in my view, that's triggered the sell-off.
But still, you would think that the measure, which was meant to instill confidence in the markets, would have had a positive effect. Instead, it seems to have had a negative one. Or you're suggesting the negative effect isn't necessarily connected to the suspension of short selling?
Yeah, I don't think what happened, you know, just to be clear, I don't think what happened in the equity markets were related to the German short selling ban. As I said, I don't think it's really very effective. I think it's more of a political posturing. I think what the sell-off was related to was the lack of credibility of the bailout of the Greek government debt situation. Of course, this also involved Germany and France in the lead, where billions, almost $1 trillion, were pledged to basically support the Greek government. And I think that the market's saying, we don't really believe this might happen eventually. It'll be too big for these countries to handle, and certainly they won't be able to deal with Portugal and then Spain, so that this kind of rescue fund that has been created, I think the markets are saying, we don't really think this is going to work.
Have other European countries like France, we're speaking to right now from Paris, France is the other leading Eurozone economy, have they been moving to reassure markets or their constituencies?
Well, you know, the measures that they took with respect to the Greek situation was to partner with Germany and be a major contributor to giving the Greek government money on conditions that they sort of cleaned up their act. I think we, the U.S. and Secretary Geithner, are concerned that this isn't calming the markets, that this response is not adequate enough. I think mixed in with all this is, concern about what's going to happen with the European Central Bank, because they're buying government bonds, basically, or taking them as collateral from banks in Europe at unreasonably high valuations. So this could, put the European Central Bank at risk. It could create inflation. There's just a lot of concerns about how the governments are bailing out Greece, how the European Central Bank is handling this, that are spooking the markets.
But there have been other moves. A number of countries have been willing to nationalize banks, while Timothy Geithner wasn't willing to go that far. And I was wondering if European countries are passing more regulations than the U.S. is, despite the fact that they already are more regulated than the United States.
Well, this is in response to the financial crisis. Are we back sort of on the financial crisis front?
We're trying to take the overview and then get specific once in a while.
Yeah, because with these crises following one, right after another, it's kind of hard to know what people are doing.
Well, aren't they all interrelated on some level?
I'm not sure. I don't think, subprime mortgages are related to Greek debt. I just think it's a con.
It just seems to me that everybody was going into debt one way or another. Money was too easy.
At that level, yes. There's over leverage. So if you want to put it at that level, you have over leverage by people and you have over leverage by governments. So in that sense, yes, it is all related. But coming back to your question, yes, I think Europe, as we started with, is engaged in further regulation of their financial markets. I wouldn't say it was the case, however, that Europe's markets were more regulated than ours in general. I think, if anything, they were kind of less regulated, which is an odd statement to say for Europe, because we all assume Europe is in some sense more regulatory in its attitudes. But I think that may be true in other areas. It isn't so much true or not as has not been so much true in financial areas. So I think in what we're seeing is Europe, in a sense, catching up with the United States in its regulatory approach to financial markets.
We're talking about global financial regulation with Hal S. Scott, Nomura Professor and Director of the Program of International Financial Systems at Harvard Law School and President of the Committee on Capital Markets Regulation. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Hal S. Scott, Nomura Professor and Director of the Program of International Financial Systems at Harvard Law School, President of the Committee on Capital Markets Regulation. Professor Scott, here in the United States, the Financial Regulations Bill is now in conference committee, where the Senate version of the bill must be reconciled with the House version. Do you think it's likely that we'll see a bill that looks more like the Senate version in order to for any hope of getting the thing passed?
Well, I think it will pass. I think it will pass by July 4th and maybe even have the president sign it by that time. In terms of the content, I think it's going to be a mix between the House and the Senate, as one would expect. So on some issues, the Senate will prevail, on some issues, the House.
What areas are the most important for legislators to strengthen regulation?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think probably the two most important areas that I would pick, and not everybody would pick the same two, would be capital requirements, which make it less likely that any institution would fail. And secondly, to limit the interconnectedness of the system in the sense that one institution should not be able to cause the failure of another institution.
We had the domino effect that we saw a couple of years ago.
Exactly right, or that we didn't see because we bailed out people to avoid it.
Yeah.
It was more, I think, the latter that we avoided the possibility by bailing out, and which is very undesirable, costs the taxpayers money, reduces market discipline, etc. So I think there's a wide agreement on the fact that we should reduce bailouts. There are very different opinions about how to do that. To me, one of the key things is to reduce interconnectedness, which basically means that one institution should be able to avoid a default, absorb a default of another institution to which it has lent credit or to which it has become a counterparty on derivatives without failing. That's kind of easier said than done, but I think we really need to focus on that.
Well, it's been said that one of the reasons that they're so interconnected is because they're so large, and there have been calls to make these, to force them to get a little smaller, but nobody seems to be going along with that. Isn't one connected to the other?
I think they're related.
For example, six banks hold more than 60% of the country's GDP.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that a large bank's failure is the real problem. I mean, we have several large banks that I don't think were in particular difficulty of failure. I think it's more the nature of the connectedness between one bank and another. I think you're right in the sense that a large bank is more likely to be interconnected in a way that might do damage, but it's not a one-to-one. It's, you know, maybe a 50%. So I think we need to focus on interconnectedness rather than size.
Some critics have argued that reform efforts to put more regulation in place will actually hurt the markets, will hurt their competitiveness.
Well, I'm not sure I'm a critic, but I am concerned about that. I think, if we do too much, if we insist on too much capital, I mean, we need to have enough capital to absorb risk, but I'm not sure we know what that is. If we tax the banks, if we were to, as the House requires, raise a $150 billion resolution fund in advance, which now the Senate would not do, all these costs pile up, and we're creating a new Consumer Protection Financial Bureau or agency, depending on how it comes out. We're going to impose a lot more costs and controls. There are provisions, there are now proposals in the Basel Committee, which is an international group of regulators that deals with capital, to impose new liquidity requirements on banks. All these things are going to affect the willingness of banks to lend because they're all going to, in a sense, require them to be more conservative.
But did weren't banks thriving when the Glass-Steagall Act was in effect before it was repealed?
Were the banks, excuse me?
They were thriving, weren't they, despite all the regulations that Glass-Steagall put in place?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they were thriving. But
Why didn't that undermine competitiveness?
Because, I mean, the repeal of Glass-Steagall?
No, because before, the banks were doing well, despite the fact that we had all those regulations, all of the criticisms.
Yes. But they, in terms of Glass-Steagall, of course, they figured out how to avoid the regulations. There were, you know, loopholes you could drive Hunter trucks through, which was part of the reason why, you know, we changed it to kind of face reality. So I don't think, as by the way, I am not against new regulation by any means. I think it's important that we have new regulations. We just have to be careful not to overdo it, as it were. You know, pendulums swing in different directions, and there's a natural tendency to overcompensate or undercompensate, for that matter. And I think we got to try to find a balance.
There was an article in the Times recently that suggested that no matter what regulations you put in place, the clever folks in the financial world are going to find loopholes and find ways to get around them.
Well, I think that is a major concern, but I don't think that should stop us from, you know, making it really hard for them to do that. And I think that, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about before. A very key part of this is to make sure that internationally we're moving in the same direction, because one of the ways these clever people find to avoid regulation is to do it outside, you know, a particular country. I must say that one of the greatest failures in the current approach in the Congress, in both the House and Senate, is not to integrate these regulatory bodies more, because we have suffered from, and I think we will continue to suffer from, regulatory arbitrage in the United States, where, you know, a given institution says, well, I'll be a national bank, I'll be regulated by the controller because I don't really want, you know, Fed regulation, et cetera. So I think we're not addressing that fragmentation of regulation, which again makes it easier for clever people to get where they want to go.
When you testified before the Senate Banking Committee, you mentioned the importance of reducing systemic risk in the derivatives markets. Why are derivatives such an important area to focus on?
Well, it goes back to the interconnected problem. It's the, I think, the principal way now in which institutions are connected in a potentially dangerous way, that is, in a way in which the failure of one might cause the failure of another. It's really through derivatives positions that this occurs. So I think a key measure we have to do, and by the way, both the House and Senate will do this, is to push as much as we can for standardized and liquid derivatives to be cleared through a central clearing house, which has the virtue of collectivizing the possible losses among all the members of the clearing house and therefore avoiding a chain reaction of failures, and holds out the promise that we would get better regulation of the entire system through better margin requirements and better operating procedures. So I think this is a key reform that I think the House and the Senate are basically going in the same direction.
Well, in negotiations over the Senate version of the bill, the proposals to regulate derivatives, the proposal that would have meant that banks would have to spin off their derivative divisions, was scaled back. So is that something that you feel should be put back into the bill?
Well, I don't read it that way. The Lincoln Amendment is in the bill, as far as I know, which would now require the banks to spin out their derivatives positions, actually from the bank and the holding company entirely. You know, when you think about it, that sounds good, but it's overly broad. I mean, one thing we want banks to do, coming back to credit default swaps, is if they have loan exposure, and so they're not naked, they have underlying risk on loans to particular borrowers, that they be able to hedge that risk. And a credit default swap, a derivative, is one way they do that. So I think there's concern. This concern, by the way, has been expressed by Barney Frank and by the Secretary of Treasury, that this is overdoing it. We're actually potentially increasing the risk in the banking system by being by such a broad prohibition on derivatives.
We've heard a lot about the role that lobbyists are playing in shaping the legislation here in the United States. Has that been a big issue in other countries and in the European Union?
I don't think so. I think, you know, lobbyists are effectiveness, in my view, is largely linked to political contributions. I might be wrong about that, but I think that's a key ingredient. And interestingly, at the European Union level, you know, there is a parliament, but the real power is in the bureaucracy and the commission. And so I think there's a kind of less direct influence, in a sense, that lobbyists can exercise over this kind of political system. Now, at the individual country level, sure, there's possibilities. But given that Europe has given such a great amount of power to the commission, in a funny way, it actually limits the ability of lobbyists.
Here in the United States, many have said that there's a problem when banks accept the government's ability to step in with bailout money, but then resist efforts to put more regulations in place.
I agree with that. I think the you know, we cannot. It is not possible to have capitalism where, you know, you sort of win, and then if you lose, you don't lose, because the government steps in and protects the creditors, and possibly even the shareholders. But that's not a viable capitalist system. You got to lose and win, and so to the extent banks are opposing regulation that would make it less likely for the government to have to step in and bail out these institutions, I think they're going in the wrong direction for their own self-interest to the extent they want capitalism to survive in the long run.
This week, the finance ministers of the G20 are meeting in South Korea ahead of a summit later this month. Since late 2008, the G20 has agreed that new regulations should be put in place. Why hasn't that happened yet?
Well, you know, we're moving a lot in that direction. You've got the Congress about to pass regulation. Europe has already done some. They have a lot pending, which it's clear will come into effect. This is a major effort. I mean, think of the Depression. You know, we didn't do it all in 1933. We dribbled this thing out over several years, and that was just within one country. So to really kind of shift our direction in such a major way takes some time. So I don't think it's time to say we failed. I think actually we're kind of on the road to success here.
Well, you didn't mention two major economic powers, Japan and China. Japan is going through a certain amount of political turmoil right now. China seems to be insisting on going its own way. So won't that affect this global approach?
Well, I think China more than Japan. I think Japan's history is basically to go along with what the West does. You know, they may take a little longer. Japan has not been one to step away from the consensus. China's a different story. I think China, in some ways, views the whole crisis and the response to the crisis as kind of, you know, a Western problem. I mean, you know, look at it this way. You have much higher levels of state control over all of the institutions in China. So you have a totally different mix of free markets and government control. It's not even regulation. It's government control. So they have mechanisms that we don't have. They don't need to depend so much on regulation because they own or indirectly direct these institutions anyway.
Well, last week, the U.S. and China pledged to have closer cooperation on financial regulations. It's because the United States, I assume, is trying to influence China's monetary policy. You think it's going to have much of an impact?
I'm sorry, repeat again. I'm not sure I grasp that.
Well, they didn't. The U.S. and China pledged to have closer cooperation on financial regulations?
Yes, they have. Of course, they always do that.
but it doesn't really mean very much because then China continues to go its own way.
Well, that's basically true. That's what's happened on exchange rates, and I wouldn't expect it will also happen on regulation.
Thank you so much for talking with us. I've been speaking about global financial regulation with Hal S. Scott, Nomura Professor and Director of the Program of International Financial Systems at Harvard Law School and President of the Committee on Capital Markets Regulation.
My pleasure.